Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, we root for the dumbest team.
I don't know about that, man. There's some, we got the Knicks out there. If we're dumb, we're young dumb, right? There are old money dumb. Like there's some organizations in not just the basketball, but in sports that have been dumb for a very long time. And, I don't know. I don't have as fatalistic of a view on all of this as you do. And maybe I should. I don't want to act like I'm, you know, doing backflips or anything with happiness, but I'm not quite there yet. But yeah, there are concerns for sure.
So the way I kind of look at it is, it's not that we became Lakers fans because of how well an organization they were once upon a time, right? Mm-hmm. We became Laker fans because my dad was a Laker fan. We grew up in Southern California, and if you were a basketball player in Southern California, you were a Laker fan, unless you were one of those nihilistic weirdos who liked the Clippers, right? And that's just kind of what we've grown up on. And to go from, you know, we were fortunate enough to root for a stable organization, and now that they aren't that, it's just... like that's where fatalism comes from, right? You watch that process take place, and now here we are. The reason we're talking about this, by the way, and today we're just going to have a little bit of fun with I don't know if it's a report. I want your thoughts on whether or not you think it was a report or just analysis regarding the Lakers and their head coaching search and the more Pelinka stuff on the part of Ramona Shelburne on ESPN Radio. And then in the second and third segments, we are going to pick up where I left off yesterday on the Lakers season in review series. We're going to start with LeBron on segments two and three. So to get back to it, Ramona Shelburne goes on ESPN, says that she thinks that the Lakers will have a head coach in the next few days or so. Early next week, I think, was what she said by the latest. Fortunately, I'm still going to be on vacation at that point. But she talked a little bit about a little more about Pelinka and where this loyalty is coming from. And one of the things that she said now, and I'm interested to hear what you think, was that it ties back to, if you get rid of Rob Pelinka, are you then severing ties with Kobe Bryant? And it's such a ridiculous talking point that it makes me think it's coming from the Lakers. And you combine that with like moving off of Magic and keeping Pelinka, right? That kind of backs up that line of thinking. So do you think it was that specuporting thing that you and I talked about, right? Where your analysis is informed by stuff you hear, or do you think it was just Ramona giving her two cents?
No, I think that was, you know, specuporting for sure. And that does not fly in the face of other things that have been said. That's very consistent with that notion. And we have a lot of other evidence of what is Jeannie Buss' value. And the fact to me that is considered a valid reason provides insight for just how they think. Like, what is it that they think is important? And it's still very much the, you know, once a Laker, always a Laker, especially if you've put in the time that Kobe has with all of the success and accolades. And it's still evidence of how insular the Lakers organization is. Now, if firing Rob Pelinka means that you're severing ties with Kobe Bryant, then the ties weren't that strong in the first place.
that too.
Right. As for one. So like the legends of an organization, I think, are important in terms of how you carry forward into the future. They help carry the brand forward, and they are ambassadors and representatives of the brand. I do not think that people like Magic Johnson and Kobe Bryant should be cast aside, nor is that what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But the Lakers just take that too much of an extreme. But the fact that even enters their calculus at all shows you what they value. And that's, for one, I think Jeannie, it's very important that Jeannie asserts her authority. I think that's important to Jeannie. And I think that the whole, like, we don't want it to look like LeBron is calling the shots thing, I think that is part of the reason why, you know, there's some hesitation on Ty Lue. You know, that's like the main reason. That's all you hear from anyone on like why they wouldn't take Lue on that. And so that, consistent with just all of the other moves that they've made, just kind of tells you that that's where what Genie prioritizes. So it makes sense to me within their value system, even if I disagree with that value system.
Here's my thing. I'm glad you gave me credit for not saying that I think these guys should be cast off as soon as their playing days are over, right? I think you, there is a tradition, there is a culture that you still have to harken back to, right, and say, all right, this helped us get us to this point right here, right? That said, if a guy who will not in any way, shape, or form help your on-court product is a deciding factor for the direction that you take your organization, you're screwed. There's no way that you can operate here in a decently stable manner if that is something that you hold in high priority, right? In such high priority that it's deciding directions that you take your organization. And look, everybody's going to jump on me and say, oh, well, you just hate Kobe. It's not a matter of hating him, right? It's a matter of hating what the Lakers forced themselves to be because of him. There's a difference there.
It's also like, for me, it's put your name on it. Like, if this is how it is, if this is what you value, then Kobe needs to be the president of basketball operations.
Yeah.
Or like, put Kobe in charge. And if Kobe doesn't want to be in charge, then Kobe or anyone else does not deserve to be the person who has that degree of influence, right? He should have influence, but it shouldn't be we don't want to replace the guy in charge because of that. Now, she said other reasons, right? They do believe in Rob's competency and all of that. But when you put it in context with every other move the Lakers always seem to make, seems to be so like loyalty, do you know what it means to be a Laker type of moves, that it paints that picture where if you're going to value that so much, I'd rather Kobe just run the thing and own the responsibility of it in totality.
And to take that, put your name on it, point a little bit further, at some point you got to come out and explain these things. Like at some point you actually do have to put your name, your word to this, and field questions from people who are going to ask very fair questions. This is you know, we've heard a lot about shadow executive and shadow this and shadow that, right? Linda Rambis is now referred to as the shadow owner. One, buy some damn lighting, Lakers. but like this idea of moving in the shadows and moving in the darkness. It's fun for conspiracies and stuff like that, but it's no way for a multi-billion-dollar corporation to operate, right? At some point, if you have fans that you claim to really care about, you have to respect that fan base enough to actually explain to them what's going into these decisions, and they haven't thus far.
Yeah, there are two elements in that. There, you always talk about from the PR perspective of if you don't put forth your story, somebody else will. And there's certainly that going on. We have not heard from leadership since Magic walked away, aside from a press release basically thanking Magic for what he did with the franchise. Then the second thing is that there is no one there who has the perception of competency in one of those leadership roles. Yeah. Nobody in those roles are proven. So like if you have somebody, that's part of the value of bringing in Jerry West or a Masai Ujiri, Bob Myers type of guy. If you hire somebody like that and you don't hear from the Lakers for a while on what's going on, there's still a presumption of it's okay, it's in good hands.
Yeah.
And since there's the absence of them telling their story and the absence of somebody who you implicitly trust, I also think there's a certain degree of we're looking for, like, Linda Rambis isn't new. Like, that influence is going back decades with Jeannie Buss. And now her being involved in, like, basketball decisions and Kurt being involved in that, that is new and that needs to be looked at. But it's not, like, it's not that new.
Yeah, it's not this groundbreaking thing that everybody's treating it to be.
Right. So all that's changed is the way that we're looking at it.
Right.
Magic may not have been the guy who was perceived to be one of the top executives in the game, but the way we were talking about the Lakers and the Lakers' decision-making a month ago was through the lens of Magic and Pelinka to a lesser extent, but very little about Jeannie Buss. Mm-hmm. And now in the absence of Magic, these things that have always been there are more coming to light than anything else.
Yeah, a couple quick things there. One, you talked earlier about how Ramona said that the Lakers believe that Rob Pelinka is a good executive. He's all of these things that they think that he isn't inept, right? Who in the Lakers organization right now has been around such an executive to be able to see what that looks like, right?
Yeah, I mean, on a day-to-day basis, probably no one, right? Like, yeah. You know, Jeannie's been around for a long time and saw, you know, Jerry West and Kupchak had a very good run. We think of him for the Mozgov and Dang contracts, and his career as an executive was a lot more than that for the Lakers. Like, the Lakers have been well-run in the time that Jeannie Buss has been here, in more years than they've been back.
Yeah.
But she hasn't necessarily been next to the basketball operations for it yet.
Yeah, I could walk into a kitchen right now at a restaurant and say that guy looks like a good chef.
Sure,
but I don't have the gravitas to make that decision. And then I kind of want to spend. We have about a minute here left. To what extent, let's have a little bit of fun here. To what extent do we think this goes, right? I had some fun with it on Twitter, and I said that, like, the analytics department is going to be Kobe's old graphing calculator. But, how ridiculous is this going to get, you know?
So, you know, I mentioned earlier about the putting your name on it. Jeannie Buss's name is on it now,
yeah.
On all of this, right?
Yeah.
Like, if this works,
impossible to avoid now.
Right. Yeah, if this works, we'll have to tip our cap to her for a crazy idea working out. Hey, that, how awesome would that be? I would love to. And by all accounts, dude, and we've said this before, Jeannie is an awesome person. I've heard so many stories about, like, just little nice things, considerate things she's done for people.
It bothers me how hard I've been on her, given everything that we've heard about her.
I was talking to Darius about this last night where it's like, because he has stories, I have stories, and it's just like this, she's a really good person. She is the type of person you want to root for. Mm-hmm. And so I would love to give her the benefit of the doubt, but her name is the one on it now. So in terms of how far does this go, if this goes, you know, down in flames in this current setup, then I don't know. What does she get even more? Like, who does she have to turn to after that? Or is that the point where she finally looks to modernize and look to the outside to get an actual functional basketball organization going?
Vanessa Bryant's going to be the next head coach, isn't she? We're going to take
those girls' teams are pretty good from what I hear. Kobe's girls' teams can play.
You just see his daughters, right? Like, Natalia is one of them. She's just out there going like this with her fingers, the thing that he used to wave off people when he was on the court. All right, so we do got to take a break here. When we come back, we're gonna segue awkwardly over to the LeBron conversation and talk about what the season was like from our perspectives.
Today's show is brought to you by Wyze. Wyze is the indoor camera that does it all. Wyze is packed with premium features that allows you to see everything from anywhere for only $20. It has 1080p full HD. It has images so clear you won't miss a thing. Also has night vision and two-way audio. Wyze's mission is to bring amazing smart home products and make them accessible to everyone. Check on your home anytime with Wyze's app's live stream. Connect with live as it unfolds in sharp focus. Live stream with 8x digital zoom. Personally speaking, I have little Avery on the way. She's going to be sleeping there in a crib, and I want to be able to see her if it's light, if it's dark. We just got her some blackout shades, so chances are it's going to be dark more often than not, and I'm really looking forward to getting her set up all over the house, by the way. At this kind of price, you can set up cameras anywhere that you see fit and be able to monitor whatever you see whatever you deem hugely valuable. Wyze is the way to go. So go to Wyze.com, that's Wyze.com/locked to take advantage of this exclusive offer. That's Wyze.com/locked.
LeBron, ironically, also made, I'm just remembering it, the when they were our Olympic teammates, right, on that boat when they were taking like a team trip somewhere, LeBron in the video did the the four fingers, like waving offensive players and teammates off. That was a great clip. But all right, so let's start by contextualizing. This is where I did, this is how I just like to start all these conversations when you grade people, right? Taking into account where expectations should have been set. Right. So if we go with LeBron, he in and of itself, himself, is going to present or force you to have lofty expectations just because of how great he's been. Right.
Right.
So heading into the season, where would you say your expectations were for LeBron, the individual, and LeBron, the teammate, the leader, all those things?
You know, I thought as a player, he was still, if not the best, one of the very best players in the game. As a leader, there's always been a lot of criticism about LeBron and his leadership style. And so I was very curious about that. I think that that's something that you get a bit better feel for on a day-to-day basis following a guy rather than watching him from afar when he's in Cleveland or Miami. So I had kind of open expectations in that respect. But yeah, I expected him to be one of the very best players in the game. How about you?
Yeah, I would say the same. I was hoping to see a little bit more commitment to the things that he may not necessarily have wanted to do, playing small ball five a little bit more often, maybe being a screen setter, if that was so necessary. But for the most part, I think as a player, he performed up to my expectations. I think where he kind of quote unquote let me down the most was the off court stuff, the leadership stuff, which, mm-hmm. Technically I had my expectations too high on that one. Those who, Cavs fans and friends of mine who paid closer attention to him over the years just kind of laughed at me when I was frustrated with the passive aggressiveness. Right. So like that's, I'll eat some of that, but how did you feel he handled the non-basketball stuff?
I thought he needed to be more assertive than he was with this team. When we had Sedano on, I mentioned this in the last pod too, but he talked about LeBron being difficult to pin down in some ways. And I think that that's true in some leadership capacity beyond just the roster construction or what coach he wants and things like that. Like the composition of this team was LeBron, and then everybody else who was really important on the team was a lot younger than him. And then mm-hmm. 1 year veterans who, like the guys who were around his age, were placeholder type of guys. Yeah. And it was very much a season where, like, as LeBron went, the Lakers followed him. And he was, he talked about having like a month-to-month leadership plan and getting this team on track that was, knocked off track by as a result of his injury. I'm a little skeptical on that idea, in that I think he needed to start out with his foot on the gas pedal a little bit more yeah. than he had it. I think what you said about him being a small ball five, that is something that a guy like him needs to look at the roster and be like, hey, this is what we need for this roster to be good. Yes, I will be more open to doing that. So I thought he tried to handle this season at the beginning like it was a season in Cleveland, and they got off to a slow start and then played much better right before the injury. But I would have liked to see him be a little more assertive with how he handled that off-court stuff.
Yeah, I would maybe take it a step further and say it wasn't even necessarily just a season in Cleveland, but the Cleveland era, right? Mm-hmm. Like I think one thing that really hit him square in the face this year was mortality. Mm-hmm. Not just
that's a great point. Yes,
not just from the injury, because that's an obvious way that you're reminded, right? Of oh yeah, that's right. I'm not going to be like this forever. But also from the standpoint of, there were games before he even got hurt that he would try to take over from the top of the key in ways that he used to be able to, and he wasn't able to do that, right? And I think when he talked about how his leadership process was derailed by the injury, I think it was actually more derailed by the starting point, as you said. Mm. That like he's saying, he thought, all right, maybe this first year I'll play this out the way that I played out my first year in Cleveland, and and my era or my contract with the Lakers is going to just follow directly the way that things went my second time in Cleveland, right?
And, yeah.
But by ignoring his own mortality and factoring that into the math there, I think that was a major mistake that he made there. That he and that led to, as you said, not having his foot on the gas early on enough.
Yeah, that's something where I don't know if it's a matter of my memories of LeBron being so painted by what he does in the playoffs that when I saw him in the regular, because I, you know, that was something, and I remember talking to a few people about this, like, I just want to see a couple of times that absolutely unstoppable LeBron. Mm-hmm. And there are two games that really come to mind for me was home against Portland and at Miami, where he looked like that. But it felt from, this is the difference from watching a guy on a day-to-day basis versus watching from afar. It felt like that didn't happen as often as it did the year before in Cleveland. And I could be wrong on that. And that, you know, obviously he's putting up, 28-8-8 while doing that. And just the numbers are still absurd, but just the I am asserting my will on this game, and there's really not a whole lot you can do about that. I thought those moments were few and far between. And, you know, it's unfair to expect a guy to do that forever. And I wonder if once LeBron's career is done, if we will look at this year as like the first year of the decline, or if it was just a confluence of a bunch of strange factors, weird roster construction, a coach that was not on the same page with his players schematically. If it was just all that, and we'll see a better version of LeBron next year, or if this is, I don't want to say the beginning of the end, but just starting that decline, which he's been able to put off longer than anyone else in history.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you moved off of the idea of it being the beginning of the end. Even if it is that, like, I still think he's a smart enough and skilled enough player to be able to handle that descent better than any other player. He's held it off for as long as he can because of his physical gifts. But I think now is when the skill aspect of that, if that takes over to a further extent, if he's more flexible, more malleable on his ideas of how he's best used, then there are ways to make that work. And what we're going to do in the next segment is figure out what that might look like. Somebody on Twitter pointed out that the head coach of the Sparks is also a former Kobe teammate. So it's just everywhere. Kobe's going to be the shadow president. So I want to talk about, you know, one of the things. I went on a podcast. I did the Knicks Wall podcast yesterday. And one of the things that they talked about was this idea of, like, if Kemba goes there, will LeBron be more willing to be involved in screen pick and roll plays, right, as the screener? And that's something that he hasn't always been all that interested in. My thing is, given how, you know, it's an extension of the point that we made the night that Magic stepped down, was that this was the most embarrassing outcome of that situation, and that might force the Lakers to rethink this idea of exceptionalism, and that greatness comes from being a Laker, not you have to reach and attain greatness as a Laker, right? The difference there is important. And I think for LeBron too, not making the playoffs. Now, yes, he missed a quarter of the season, but not making the playoffs at all, after years of hearing about how he coasted to the finals just because he played in the East. And in his first year in the West, you know, his haters have that fuel that they can point to again, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's something that, you know, and I do think that LeBron may have miscalculated a little bit on what it meant to be in the West.
Yeah.
I would love to see, and I think that natural instincts for a great player go in the opposite direction. I would love to see him put a little more trust, which means in a lot of ways more touches and other guys in Brandon, in Lonzo, and kind of investing in them early in the season so that they could have been more ready to go, especially once he went down. You know, like Lonzo's role changed significantly, Brandon's role changed significantly, and there was always going to be an adjustment period at the start of the season. But in a lot of ways, the ball was completely taken out of both of those guys' hands, maybe not completely, but to a significant extent, in a way that it didn't have to be that severe, and their ability as ball handlers, and we saw it come to fruition when they were put in those positions, could make LeBron's life easier too. The Lonzo LeBron pick and roll was very productive when LeBron was the role man, right? And even if it was a skip pass to the weak side, you know, helped out shooters. So I would like to see LeBron kind of do that a little more and rely on his teammates a little bit more while operating off of the ball. I also think that it's somewhat unrealistic to expect a guy to change his game in his 17th season. Like, you know, Jordan and not even really Kobe that much after the Achilles tear, at least. But like MJ was like free throw line extended and below toward the end of his career. And he retired at a younger age, or at least with less mileage than LeBron's at least before the, you know, Washington Wizards stint. I would like to see LeBron as more of a 15 feet and in guy without taking that perimeter stuff completely out of his game.
Yep, I would agree. One of the things that I've spent a lot of time thinking about during these playoffs is the concept of the guy who dominates the ball, right? The guy who just, you know, the Hardens, the Chris Paul during his prime, LeBron obviously during his prime and the season. And while technically speaking, the smart basketball play, when you have a guy like that on your team, is to feed them and allow them to do the creating for everybody else, right? That does, however, in my opinion, and this isn't a fully formed idea quite yet, but what it does open you up to is, as that guy goes, so will your team, right? And it's just that's not all that groundbreaking of analysis there, but I think it's also kind of why we've seen some postseason failings from Chris Paul teams, right? We've seen some lapses, you know, the Rockets going 0 for 27 from 3 last year, right? I'm not saying that was because it was James Harden and that's the way that he plays, but if that's how you're designing your offense, your guy has to be immortal, right? And for LeBron, it's worked because he has been that good, that physically gifted, and that able to carry those teams for such long stretches of time. He's not there anymore, though. And that's where I think it's going to be interesting to see how he handles that dynamic.
Also, like, the roster doesn't exactly match what he had done in the past. Like, so I felt like Magic took it to an unhelpful extreme, but it wasn't entirely wrong in terms of, like, what are the natural abilities of the guys on this team? That is that they're ball handlers. They can pass the ball. They can create shots for themselves and for others, but not as much in terms of their ability to shoot. Right. And so how can you maximize that? And one of the things that, and I'm not trying to put Kobe versus LeBron, right? But this is one of the small bits of brilliance from Kobe that I think was underappreciated, is he understood how to tailor his game to the surrounding talent.
Yeah.
And people always confuse this with, like, getting assists, but that's not really what it is like, Powell was a different type of big man than Shaq was.
Yeah.
Right. And Lamar was a different type of four than, say, Horace Grant. And Kobe's ability to understand where the gaps were, where the weaknesses and deficiencies were. And since Kobe was strong across the board, just as LeBron is, he knew, like, okay, this is my place where not just where I can get mine, but also where the team really needs me. The team didn't really need that give the ball to LeBron and let him do everything the way that he always has done for the rest of his career. What the team really needed were some more bigs, some more fives, right? They needed some outside shooting, and they needed somebody who could operate off of the ball but still have that tremendous gravity that he has. So I would like LeBron to look at the tape over the course of this summer and self-evaluate along with, and you know, all of this makes it sound like he didn't have a fantastic year, and he did.
Yeah.
But I think that he could get more out of the Lakers' surrounding talent and their natural inclinations by shifting his role a little bit without losing any value.
Yeah, I'm, you know, the kind of, to me, my favorite team right now to watch is the Warriors. And it's not from a standpoint of like, I love their antics on the court and stuff like that, but I like their collective approach to basketball that, you know, if KD has it going, we're going to feed KD. Steph allows himself to operate off the ball enough and let his gravity just dictate what the offense or what the defense has to try to do to stop their offense, right? And it's this collective kind of watch that works all in tune that just makes it really hard, if not impossible, frankly, to guard, right? And now they're obviously aided by the fact that they have two of the game's top, like, five-ish players, you know, depending on how you feel about Steph and where he ranks there. So that certainly helps it. And then they also, with that, have one of the game's greatest ever shooters in Klay Thompson. And like, you know, if Andre Iguodala is your fourth or your fifth best player, you're probably doing all right. So, like, I'm trying to isolate their approach to the game from their overall talent. But I do think, just in a general sense, the idea of an offense, if your guy isn't peak LeBron, and this is no longer peak LeBron anymore that we're looking at. If your guy isn't peak LeBron and he's going to be the single spearhead of the offense, you're really limiting things. And like you said, the Lakers have guys who can, they can't take over in the same ways that KD can, but they can carry a larger load than they did last season. And it's not just a LeBron thing, too. It was one of the frustrations that we had with Luke was you have this team that was created to have – that was designed to have multiple spots that they can attack defenses from, but they didn't pass the ball nearly enough to be able to create those advantages. And yep. And so for whoever takes over next, this isn't just a LeBron thing, though, you know – as we saw last season, if you get buy-in from LeBron, that's the best way that you're going to be able to get some of these ideas to come to fruition. But whoever the next coach is, they have to really look at the Lakers and say, okay, in late-game situations, yes, we will probably go to the LeBron well pretty often. But they have to rethink this idea of everything that we do is going to go through the LeBron funnel, because I just don't think that's a smart way to approach offense in what will be 2020.
Yeah, both at LeBron's stage of his career and considering the surrounding Lakers talent.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think are realistic expectations for LeBron next season? Do you think the days of just, you know, penciling him into the MVP conversation are over? Do you where would you set, you know, and we don't know what the roster is going to look like next year.
Right.
But do you think he will do enough learning from the fiasco that was last season to make any of these changes?
I think LeBron's one of the smartest players to ever play in the NBA, mm-hmm. and I think that he will learn from this. He may come to different conclusions than you or I come to
yeah.
on the how that should look, but I do think that he will make adjustments having gone through it and lived through it. I don't think he's going to be an MVP candidate going forward for a couple of reasons. I think that if the Lakers do have somebody on the roster who is in, you know, MVP type of discussions, it would be the second max guy who comes in, because mm-hmm. it's so narrative based nowadays where it's like, he came in and saved the yeah. Lakers,
look,
right?
Look
like,
at where they are now.
Right. Like, if the Lakers are a 50-win team next year on the backs of a Kawhi Leonard or Jimmy Butler or someone like that, maybe not Butler, but, you know, like, if somebody comes in, they're probably going to be the person that gets a lot of the credit for that. I also don't think LeBron has 82 games worth of MVP level play, because it's a regular season award. Yeah. Like, I don't think either Giannis or James Harden are the best player in the game, but they're the two prominent guys in the MVP discussion. So, you know, I do think, though, that LeBron will be in the, you know, top five, top seven players in the NBA next season, based on what he's able to do, provided that he can stay healthy. If he's able to stay healthy, I feel pretty good about next season, even with everything that's not gone entirely, you know, well with the front office and without knowing exactly what happens over the course of this offseason. Lakers were still in a pretty good spot when he was healthy.
Yeah, that's kind of what I come back to. I hope, though, that they don't use that as a crutch, you know, in terms of how they feel about last year's roster, right? Mm-hmm. The idea of the premise of yesterday's show was basically me saying, this is what ownership, the front office, and Luke, this was the margin of, you know, margin for error that they provided to the Lakers, right? And then when those injuries took hold, that margin for error was non-existent, and it was impossible to overcome.
I was worried about the Lakers basically running it back, even if it's not the exact same players, similar conceptually. I was a lot more worried about that with Magic in the fold. I think there's less, that's less likely to happen, and then for them to blame everything on injuries with him gone.
Yeah. Just further evidence, you guys, that Pete is happy that the Lakers missed the playoffs and that Magic stepped down as a result of that. And all right, man. Well, the good news is over the weekend, we'll probably get a head coach, it sounds like, right? Mm-hmm. How do you feel? We'll end on this. We have about 5 minutes before we have to get going here. How do you feel about this entire situation where it seems like, and you can correct my reading of this too if you think, but it seems like the Lakers are waiting on Monty, who is waiting on how things turn out in Philly. The Suns are in the background saying like, hello, but they don't really matter right now. And meanwhile, Tyronn Lue is kind of stuck in the fold, looking like, well, you guys, I'm still probably the best candidate to be hired, but they don't really seem all that interested in that.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, the longer that it went on, that there's a wait, the more that it indicates that Monty Williams is their first choice to me. Because Ty Lue can be had, right? He's not someone, like, you know, a couple of people have pointed out, is there any concern that nobody's pursuing Ty Lue? For me, there's not, because the only other team in the mix is Phoenix, right? I don't think there's another team right now that has a coaching vacancy. So the, you know,
Memphis does.
Okay, Memphis does, right? And that's fair. You know, maybe they could use that. And you also have the Cavs. Okay, so there are a couple of other teams, but he's not a candidate for the Cavs. They just let him go.
Yeah.
And so you've got Memphis, the Lakers, and Phoenix. Memphis and Phoenix in particular are young rebuilding teams, right? Lakers are young, but they have more immediate type aspirations. Yeah. You want like player development type of guys in those type of situations in Cleveland as well. So to me, Ty Lue not being a candidate for those jobs is not indicative of some, you know, low opinion of him. They're just different circumstances than the Lakers. I do think that your read on the situation is pretty accurate, though, that, and it'll be interesting, you know, if Williams takes the job in Phoenix, where there may be some, you know, more front office, he may have more influence. I actually think he's a better fit in Phoenix.
Me too.
Where, because
lower expectations.
Not just that, like, I think Monty is more of a culture setter type of guy, and the Lakers aren't in that position. Even Lakers don't have great culture. I don't want to sound like they do, but they don't have, like, the Lakers have LeBron. The Lakers have more, again, immediate aspirations and more of a, you know, whereas Phoenix is still, all these years later, from the ground up type of circumstance. And I think he's a good guy to put in that sort of place where he can get the buy-in from everybody and at least get some cohesion where it hasn't been there in Phoenix in years.
Yeah. We the one thing we can probably safely predict is that Sarver isn't going to overpay Monty Williams.
So yeah.
I don't think the Lakers are Laker fans. If you're on Team Monty, I don't think you have to worry about the Lakers having to completely overpay Monty because Sarver's going to go throw the bank at a head coach. That is something that he has never been all that interested in doing. We'll see how it turns out, though. And like I always say, if the Lakers do go out and hire a head coach and that does happen over the weekend, I will try to get to a microphone. I will try to record some kind of a quick response to it. But in the event that that doesn't happen, get your questions into iTunes in the form of a 5-star review, and I will answer those on Sunday night for Monday's show. For now, though, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you on Monday.